Michigan with a thrilling 48-42 triple overtime victory on Saturday. Sadly, of course, it was against Rutgers, but Michigan may have found their quarterback and a guy they're most comfortable with running the football. We'll discuss the Michigan offense and onto a team playing their worst football in history, the Penn State Nittany Lions. What is wrong in Happy Valley? We'll discuss that and preview the game this Saturday in Ann Arbor with Corey Geiger from Nittany Sports Now, Big Ten weekly picks, and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Welcome to this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. I'm your host, Kevin Rich. As always, you can tweet me at krich23, email the show at hailtothepod@gmail.com, and be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast anywhere your favorite podcasts are found, including Apple iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Also, be so kind, leave a 5-star review, and be sure to subscribe as well, because when you do, anytime we drop a new episode, it will download directly to your listening device. Good to be back on the podcast this week. And by the way, apologies for a lack of a podcast last week, as has been the case with many of us during the crazy year of 2020 that we all want to forget about. Sometimes there's just too much going on and things happening outside of our control. And that was certainly the case with me personally last week with my full-time gig. But all is good. Most importantly, everyone's safe and healthy. Crazy things going on the work front in my full-time gig last week, and was unable to get you a podcast. But that was probably good, right? I mean, after the Wisconsin debacle, like, we all just kind of needed a break. So here we are as we talk about Saturday's game and get you ready for the game against Penn State. And, you know, Michigan gets back in the win column on Saturday, and not really the way you want it to get into the win column when it takes you 3 overtimes to beat a team you shut out 52-0 last year. But nonetheless, Michigan gets a much-needed win on the road at Rutgers last week, a 48-42 win in triple overtime. And it's funny because the Big Ten Network, they featured the game the other night. I'm sitting here, it's, you know, late night, Monday night, turn it on Big Ten Network, and they're featuring the game, like the game of the week, Michigan and Rutgers. Like, please, don't make that one of Michigan's classic football games. You know, like in the spring or summer when BTN does their Michigan Day and they play back these historic football games and comebacks? Please, BTN, Fox, I'm begging you, don't ever show that football game again. Like, please, like, don't show it. Show the Michael Penix stretch. I know that's not even a Michigan highlight, but you know what? Like, on your historic Indiana football day, you're going to play that. On the historic Michigan day, if you're between showing the Michigan-Rutgers game and another game this year, like, go play the Indiana-Penn State game. Like, you can give Indiana that highlight on Michigan day. Just don't ever play this game again. And it's funny because who am I really kidding? I mean, you look back at 2010, that triple overtime win against Illinois, another season we'd probably prefer to forget about. That was one of those games that they featured as a Michigan historic football game. So they'll probably end up showing this one, and that will be time to turn something else on the TV when that time comes. But listen, this was one of Michigan's largest come from behind wins in school history. Actually tied for third, as Michigan has come back from 17 down 5 times in history. Of course, the number 2 game was the 2008 Wisconsin game when Michigan was down 19 and came back and won. That wasn't really a good year either. And then the first one, the 2003 Minnesota game, when Michigan came back down 21. Now that was a much better year, my friends. Let's celebrate that win. That one should always be on a Michigan football day on BTN. Michigan beating Notre Dame, Michigan State, and Ohio State that year. Of course, sadly, that hasn't happened since. Now, listen, I'm going to be a bit glass half full here on the pod. I mean, I can get into the continued struggles on defense. I can get into the fact that how the hell did this team go to triple overtime with Rutgers? I could get into all that, but I want to be more optimistic here because Michigan showed something on Saturday. And yes, this doesn't dismiss the questions on Harbaugh or Don Brown. This doesn't dismiss the inexcusable loss to Michigan State a few weeks ago. This doesn't dismiss the fact, for whatever reason, year in and year out, this team doesn't really build any momentum until they get a little bit further in the season. And it does not dismiss that this was an ugly win. But a win is a win, and there is some hope here on the horizon. And I was thinking, you know, when this game was 17-0, I was like, the hope was going to be Michigan basketball or Michigan hockey, which, by the way, they're having a great start to the season. If you haven't watched Michigan hockey, be sure to tune in and watch those guys play. What an incredible performance they had the other night beating Wisconsin. But nonetheless, it's a football podcast. And what I'm getting at here is there's hope with this offense. When Cade McNamara came in after this team was down 17-0, the offense started to click. How much better was this offense and the team in general when Cade McNamara was out there? It was night and day. McNamara was 27 for 36 for 260 yards and 4 touchdown passes. He also scored 1 on the ground in overtime. This offense had life with him at quarterback. This offense had rhythm. This dude stood out like he's the guy that needs to be the quarterback for the rest of the season. And you talk about Michigan's talent level, right? And one of the things we've been questioning here the last few weeks is, with Michigan having as much talent as they do, how do they lose to a team like Michigan State? How do they get blown out against a team like Indiana or Wisconsin when they constantly recruit and bring in top classes year in and year out? It's the systems. Yeah, you got to bring in talented players, but you got to put them in systems where they can perform effectively, efficiently, and win you ball games. Look at the Northwestern-Wisconsin game on Saturday. It was an ugly game, but Northwestern has a system. They've got a talented defensive system that they play just tremendous defense, and they have enough personnel on the offensive side of the ball in their system to get things done and win big games like they did against Wisconsin on Saturday. So when you talk about guys in a system and matching a system with the right personnel, Cade McNamara is that guy right now for Michigan. And I understand, you know, why the coaching staff wanted Milton to be the quarterback to start the year. He oozes with arm strength. But Michigan just doesn't have the type of receivers or strength on the O-line to give Milton the opportunity to let his strength shine. And maybe he transfers and gets a shot elsewhere and puts up big numbers other places, although his accuracy would have to improve greatly. But what I'm getting at is Michigan has slot receivers. Michigan has a couple big tight ends. They're breaking in a new offensive line. So teams they play against that rush the quarterback, bring a big rush on defense, you got to get the ball out quickly. Michigan has a system that should be about getting these guys the ball and letting them make their moves. Big tight ends when you got to stretch the chains. Slot receivers that can get open in space and make plays. That whole speed and space concept is all that Josh Gattis talks about and all we've been told we were going to see out of a Josh Gattis offensive Michigan team. Cade McNamara is the better quarterback to run this system. Like, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out. We saw it in the Wisconsin game. And it's a shame that Michigan blew a chance to get their defense off of the field when they bum-rushed the punter and got called for running into the kicker. Cade McNamara had came in, led them down the field, 3 big passing plays. They score a touchdown. They kick the ball to Wisconsin. They have Wisconsin in a 3-and-out. All right, you're building a little bit of momentum and you run into the kicker and Wisconsin does what Wisconsin does. They get a first down on the penalty and they proceed to mount a crushing 8-minute touchdown drive and the game was over after that. But what Cade McNamara showed on Saturday against Rutgers is that he is the right fit for this offensive scheme. I don't know if maybe Milton just had a better week in practice or what it was, but the fact that they waited till it was 17-0 in the game to realize that Cade McNamara was the guy that needed to come in this game, that's a bit baffling to me, at least after what we saw in the Wisconsin game last week. So maybe, yes, maybe, just maybe, Joe Milton was that much better in practice all this week. But what Cade McNamara showed is he is the right fit for this offense. The RPO, slant passes, plays that allow him to get the ball out of his hands early, speed in mother frickin' space. Cade McNamara is the better quarterback to be able to do that. And oh, by the way, when that works, like it did on Saturday, it opens up the running game. And there it is. There enters Hassan Haskins, who, guys, he's got to be the number one back moving forward. Like, enough is enough with the running back by committee. I get it. You got to bring in other guys for specific plays. You got to give your bell cow a little bit of a rest when you need to. Totally get it. That's fine. But if Haskins turns into an afterthought this Saturday or splits all of the carries in single digits with the other guys, I am literally going to break my television. 24 rushes, 111 yards, the game-winning touchdown. Feed the player you trust the most. Don't get fancy. So yes, offensively on Saturday, and also shout out to Cornelius Johnson, by the way. That dude can flat out ball. Great game on Saturday. But offensively on Saturday, I know it was Rutgers and there's nothing to celebrate. But Michigan found something on Saturday that I feel, and I think you can feel too, they can absolutely build on moving forward, and that gives them some hope for the rest of the year. So it started with a Rutgers win on Saturday. They're facing a unbelievably poor Penn State game, a historically bad Penn State team this Saturday, followed by Maryland. All of a sudden, Michigan could get a couple big wins on the board before that big game against Ohio State in Columbus in December. Why it took the coaching staff three losses in a row and a 17-0 deficit in last week's game to figure that all out, absolutely concerning. And that doesn't dismiss the criticism that's after this coaching staff right now. However, how they respond this week, how the players respond this week, and how they respond the rest of the way after building some momentum in that win on Saturday is going to be absolutely critical moving forward. All right, Michigan and Penn State set to battle on Saturday at noon in the Big House, and here to help preview the game from the Penn State perspective is Corey Geiger from Nittany Sports Now. You can find some awesome coverage of Penn State athletics there. Check out his great work at nittanysportsnow.com. Follow him on Twitter at Corey Geiger. Corey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Better than the Penn State football team, actually.
Well, you know, Corey, Michigan fans have been so disappointed with their football team this year, 2-3, and then here comes Penn State, 0-5 on the year, worst start in program history. I mean, I guess there's some similarities maybe with what's going on with these two storied programs, but it's just so upsetting we can't have anything nice in 2020. But what's from your perspective, I mean, what's going on in Happy Valley?
Well, do we have about 3 hours? really, first and foremost, they lost a lot of really good players. Okay, yeah. So one of the best defenders in the country, Micah Parsons, opted out. One of the best running backs in the country, Journey Brown, has a heart condition that forced him to retire from football. On the first series of the season, his backup, Noah Kane, who was expected to be a good running back, injured his leg on a freak play and was lost for the season. This past Saturday, Pat Freiermuth, an All-American tight end, did not play. He's out for the season. He's going to need surgery. That's their four best players. So when you lose your four best players, three of which, you know, could have been major game changers, especially against Indiana, Maryland, Nebraska, that's just where they are. And then secondly, their quarterback play has just been awful. Sean Clifford, their starter, was expected to be good and reliable and consistent. He's been anything but. Turning the ball over left and right. And so when you lose a lot of good players, and yeah, Penn State's recruited well, but, you know, any team in the country that loses its three best players by the first series of the season, you're going to be in scramble and panic mode. And it's just made it that much worse that the quarterback has not been good and the defense has just been horrendous in the first half of games.
I mean, I feel like I could replace the fact that you cover Penn State and say you cover Michigan, because that's exactly what's going on with Michigan as well. Yeah. You know, I guess a lot of blame in Ann Arbor has been thrown on Jim Harbaugh and the coaching staff. And yeah, there are, you know, you had big guys, you know, sitting out for Michigan side of things. Ambry Thomas on the defense, Nico Collins opting out for the season. Dylan McCaffrey opts out, so they feel Joe Milton's the guy at quarterback. And lo and behold, it looks like maybe Cade McNamara is the guy. So, you know, similar things there, but a lot of the blame
in Ann Arbor has been thrown on Jim Harbaugh and the coaching staff, and easy to blame the coach when things aren't going well. I know James Franklin's been taking a lot of heat. I mean, do you think that's fair, or are there, you know, maybe other bigger factors at play here that it shouldn't all be thrown on the coach?
Yeah, I just wrote a piece last night, five things you cannot blame on James Franklin. You can't blame him for the players not being there. You can't blame him for Clifford being poor. They've had 44 false positive tests. 44 false positive tests. Wow. That means kids and staff are missing a practice or two here or there basically every week, and then having to deal with the emotional roller coaster of thinking that they're positive. So if you think these kids are focused on football, I mean, I can't imagine that they are. And then you had this crazy finish in the opener against Indiana. They come back and take a lead. They're up in overtime. Indiana goes for two. I thought the ball was out of bounds, that Michael Penix stretched out. The officials ruled a touchdown on replay. Hey, look, if Penn State wins that game, if Penn State beats Indiana on that crazy play, I think you take a different level of confidence going forward. Instead, you've lost that game, okay? Then you got Ohio State in week two, and they weren't going to win that at all. So now you're 0-2, and all of your goals are gone. Every single goal that you had is gone. If you had beaten Indiana on that crazy play and then lost Ohio State and you're 1-1, you still have a lot of things to play for, I think. So I think mentally, again, that's not James Franklin's fault that the officials, I think, blew that call. But certainly he is taking a beating, an absolute beating, the likes of which we have not seen since Michigan beat Penn State 49-10 in 2016, and people wanted James Franklin fired then.
Now, I guess, you know, the folks that I'm hearing that are calling for James Franklin's head, and I don't think, I mean, look, you look at his contract, I think it would be idiotic for Penn State to let him go. He'd have to probably leave on his own. But those that are calling for James Franklin are saying, well, that's just the problem. Like, you know, the coaching staff, they should get the players, you know, ready to roll. They can't let an 0-2 start, you know, demoralize the season. I mean, so what are the thoughts there? I mean, it's something that it's like, you know, some of the blame's got to come on the coaching staff, but, you know, yeah. Where do they go from here? You know, and how do they respond if you're 0-5? You know, you don't want to go 0-7, 0-8.
The blame falls on their slow starts in the first half. This has been an issue for James Franklin even in years when they were good. They play poor first halves and be trailing or tied against teams where they had no business. And then they'd come out and play really well in the second half. This program has a problem with starts. And so you fall behind everybody. You fall behind Indiana. You fall behind Nebraska. You fall behind Maryland big. And the team's just not ready to play. That clearly falls on James Franklin. Because we've seen in the second halves of some of these games that there is still enough talent to beat some of these teams. Not Ohio State. But that clearly falls on Franklin. And look, the issue is just that when you take the top players out of the team, and then you get off to these slow starts, and then the demoralization sets in. I just don't think we can treat this year like any other year where what we think could or should or might happen with a football game with an 18 to 22-year-old kid. Everybody's going to be different. And I think Michigan and Penn State both fall into this, that you're used to playing in front of 100-plus thousand people. You're used to getting the energy and the mojo out of the crowd. And, you know, I can't speak fully for Michigan, but I think that's a big problem for Penn State, is they're just not motivated. They have a lot of reasons to be motivated to play, but I've given you some reasons to not be motivated to play. And when you show up and you don't have the 100,000 fans to support you as well, it's even less motivation for you.
So on the glass half full or half empty side of things, you know, Penn State's been really, I mean, they've been on a really good run the last few years. Is there, in your mind, is there a sense that this year is just one big, you know, aberration, or are the problems maybe plaguing this team this year maybe a sign of what might come, you know, next year and down the road?
Well, that is the $64,000 question. I don't think they're going to be this bad next year, but they open against Wisconsin next year. Then they've got Ball State. Then they play Auburn. And then there's a game against Iowa. So, okay, if you're talking, you start, maybe you start 1-2 next year, 2-3 or something. now you're in that same boat of where's your leadership, where's your motivation going to come from? It'll be a bit different factors hopefully next year with as everything returns more to normal. But their recruiting is not going great either. They're 24th in the country in the 247 rankings. And yeah, I wrote this the other day. James Franklin is a good recruiter. I think he is overrated badly as a recruiter because people seem to think he's this elite, great recruiter, and he's not. In 8 recruiting cycles, he's finished in the top 10 once. And generally, they're anywhere from 15 to 20, 20 or so somewhere. And that's good. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's good. But when Ohio State and some other places are in the top 5, top 10 every year, and that's your competition, you know, again, you add all these things up, who knows what their quarterback situation is going to be next year. We don't know who's going to start this week with Clifford and Will Levis. And, you know, whoever comes, when they come back next year, they're still going to have big questions at the quarterback spot. So I don't think next year will be this bad. But because there is a lot of character and heart in this program, I believe. But I can't say anything definitive because you just never know. You're dealing with young kids and their emotions and their lives, and Penn State has a lot of problems in those aspects right now.
Yeah, it's been a wacky, wild, and unprecedented season so far. We're talking to Corey Geiger from Nittany Sports Now. Check out his great work at nittanysportsnow.com. And Corey, let's talk about the quarterback situation. Sean Clifford gets benched in the loss to Nebraska. Will Levis gets the start against Iowa. Probably the right decision, although he was ineffective, gets pulled for Clifford. What do you make out of the quarterback situation right now, and who do you think the guy is on Saturday?
Yeah, if I had to guess, I'd go Clifford for this reason. Sean Clifford, is at his best, is significantly better than Will Levis. I still think Will Levis is kind of a running back who's playing quarterback. Now, listen, against Iowa, Will Levis was 13 of 16. But it was for 106 yards, and he couldn't stretch the defense, and he's not the kind of guy that is going to just, you know, really threaten you with his arm. Now, on one touchdown drive, he had 7 carries for 44 yards. Well, he finished the game with 34 yards rushing. Let me repeat that. On one drive, he had 44 yards rushing, and he finished the game with 34 yards rushing. Ugh. So what does that tell you about what Iowa did the rest of the game? They figured it out. And they didn't just let him take off and run. So once, if he can't run effectively, he's not going to be a major threat with his arm. But the flip side with Clifford is Clifford might lose the game himself in the first quarter with an interception or two that's returned and bad turnovers. So Sean Clifford lost the job because he kept making terrible mistakes. They have a saying here, and they say this all over football, the ball is the program. Well, Sean Clifford giving the ball to the other team all the time is a big reason why this program is in big trouble. And so what do you decide? Do you decide to go back to the guy that is turning the ball over all the time, or the guy that can protect the ball a little bit better but isn't a huge threat? I mean, that's you're really talking the lesser of two evils there.
Yeah, we talked about the guys that are out, you know, as we look at this game on Saturday and you look at the offense, we talk about, you know, guys that are out like, you know, Freiermuth, who, you know, gosh, you know, you hope gets surgery and gets ready to roll because that's a guy that should be playing on Sundays next year. Got the running backs that are out, Journey Brown, Noah Kane. Whether it's Clifford or Levis, playing at quarterback on Saturday, who can Penn State really rely on to maybe make some plays offensively? We've seen Michigan's defense, particularly the secondary, play a bit weak here this year. You know, who are some of the guys you'd expect to step up on Saturday and try and make this a little easier on the quarterback?
Well, let me say this. Sean Clifford can beat Michigan. Sean Clifford can beat Michigan. If Sean Clifford plays well and throws the ball well and doesn't turn it over, he can beat Michigan. Michigan's defense has really struggled, and Sean Clifford can do enough things to take advantage of that and beat them. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not picking Penn State to win this game. In fact, I think Michigan beats Penn State badly because I have no faith that Sean Clifford won't turn the ball over, and if they go to Levis, I don't have faith that he can beat Michigan with his arm. So, if they can play up to their potential, you know, they've got a really good receiver in Jahan Dotson. They've got a really good freshman receiver in Parker Washington, but the loss of Freiermuth is just massive. That was your check down. Devin Ford, we didn't even mention this yet. He's their third string running back. Well, he missed pretty much all of last week's game with an injury. So now they're down to two true freshmen. And both these kids are good, but they're true freshmen from Florida. They were four-star recruits, Keziah Holmes and Kevon Lee. But you're down three running backs now. So, again, I know Michigan, we're talking, I'm on a Michigan podcast, and Michigan fans are sitting there thinking, you've got problems. Michigan's problems don't come close to the problems Penn State has. And I think this is the most disappointing team in the history of college football. Now, the reason I say that is this is the first team in the preseason top 10 to start 0-5. And if Michigan beats them badly, I don't know that I necessarily can pick Penn State to beat Rutgers next week. You know, I saw what Rutgers did against Michigan. So, you know, this Penn State team has a lot of issues here over the next couple of weeks they've got to get fixed.
Yeah, you know, it's not that, you know, Michigan and Penn State have this huge rivalry. I think there's probably maybe some love lost there anyways, but you know, it's like it's Michigan. It's you want to grab your Penn State, you know, fans in your life, and Penn State want to grab the Michigan fans in your life and just kind of hug each other and say, "Hey, we're all going to get through this together," because there are, you know, similar problems for both teams.
Let me tell you, there ain't no Penn State fans hugging Michigan. Penn State hates it. There's no love lost with Penn State fans with Michigan, I'll tell you that.
Well, hey, in the year of 2020, we'd have to do it socially distanced, I guess. But
yeah, right, exactly.
Corey, I think – you know, watching, you know, because I love Big Ten football, and obviously, you know, Michigan's close to my heart, but I love watching all these games every week and just the how great Big Ten football is. And what's really concerned me about Michigan, and kind of the same thing I see with Penn State, is, you know, teams that traditionally are so good in the trenches struggling to teams that they really shouldn't be struggling in the trenches against. And I know with the way Penn State's been playing, and with the injuries and the players that are out, I think what surprised me against Iowa on Saturday and the week before against Nebraska was how poorly at times the offensive line played. And I've seen this at Michigan this year too. I mean, you just don't expect to get beat in the trenches against teams you should have way more talent than. Has that been a surprise for you too in terms of where the offensive line is right now for this team?
It's a huge surprise. I've covered Penn State for 15 years. And for 14 of those years, the offensive line is underachieved. Not the only one that didn't was 2008, a Rose Bowl team. But every other year, yeah, the offensive line has been a question. People thought coming into this year, the offensive line was going to be really, really good. It's turned out to be very poor. And so now they've been rotating some people, trying to find what James Franklin calls the best five. You know, and most colleges don't rotate a lot of offensive linemen. That's not good programs anyway. So they're searching for answers. And yes, if the quarterback's been running for his life the whole season, Sean Clifford, either through his own volition, just taking off too early, or getting pressured and taking off. You know, the quarterbacks have been running a lot, and even though Michigan has struggled defensively, I can see them getting to the quarterback a good bit on Saturday because Penn State's offensive line has just had a lot of issues.
On the other side of the ball, Corey, Penn State allowed the opponent to score 30 points or more in every game this year. You talked about the turnovers, turnover battles they're having, and Sean Clifford's been turning the ball over quite a bit. Is that more of the defense struggling because of the turnovers the offense is causing that's putting them in bad spots, or are there some more serious, significant issues in your eyes with this defense?
Both. The defense does have issues. They've struggled tackling. They've given up huge plays, scoring plays, especially in the first halves of games. So they've certainly had their issues. But more than 30% of the opponent's points this year have scored off of turnovers. I mean, Iowa scored 24 points off of four Penn State turnovers last week, including a pick six off of Clifford. So that 30-point number is jarring. It's six consecutive games now for the first time ever, going back to the Cotton Bowl last year against Memphis. Penn State has been known for defense forever. But, yeah, they certainly have problems on defense themselves, and the offense has really put them behind the eight ball with a lot of turnovers and plus territory that really, I mean, sometimes the defense has come up with stands and forced field goals, you know, in those short field situations. But more often than not, you know, after the turnovers, the opposing teams have really cashed in.
Corey, you kind of previewed this earlier, but what makes our job fun is trying to prognosticate and predict how the game might play out on Saturday. We talked about it, obviously two teams that have struggled this year. Although I get a sense maybe, I know it was Rutgers, but Michigan may have found some renewed juice with McNamara at quarterback, you know, coming in 17-0 and bringing that team back to win the game in triple overtime. You know, how do you see the game playing out on Saturday, and what's your prediction?
Well, you can help me on this maybe, because I love what McNamara did. I finished my work with the Penn State game and got to watch, you know, most of the end of that Rutgers game, and I love what McNamara did. So if that's just an illusion, please tell me. If that's a fraud, what we saw from McNamara, then I'll trust your instincts, because from what I saw from that guy, he is the kind of quarterback that is going to give Penn State all kinds of problems.
Yeah, no, he looks legit. I mean, the knock on with Michigan fans with the coaching staff was why they waited to be down 17-0 to let him in after he put a great drive up against Wisconsin, you know, the week before.
If that's any indication, then I'm thinking Michigan is going to win this game pretty handily. I'm going to go about 37-24. 37-24 Michigan, but hey, these are two bad teams, and I think Michigan is the far better team of the two bad teams. So how much faith do I have in that prediction? Not a lot, but I do have a lot of faith that Michigan, from a confidence standpoint, let me just mention the intangible. Even though it was Rutgers, I got to think those Michigan kids and coaches are really fired up this week. Because that was a good win. You know, when you're down 17-0 against anybody, and then you get a missed field goal in overtime after they walked out of there really fortunate. And I think that's going to carry over with a lot of confidence. Meanwhile, these Penn State players and coaches don't have any confidence right now. So if this ends up a 4-touchdown game, I really would not be all that surprised.
What a great year 2020 is to be excited about a triple overtime win against Rutgers. That's the state we're in.
Yeah.
Corey, I appreciate the time. He's Corey Geiger from Nittany Sports Now. Just some great coverage of Penn State athletics, not just football, but all the great sports over at Penn State. We got basketball season starting this week. Hockey's in full gear as well. You can check out his great work. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to fire up your fans. I only picked Penn State basketball to go 8-17. And 6-14 in the Big Ten, but I did pick them to beat Michigan.
Oh,
I was struggling trying to find some wins for Penn State. Again, I've only got them going 6-14 with some wins over Nebraska and Northwestern. I threw Penn State a bone with a win over Michigan. So just wanted to throw that out to your fans whenever that game comes around. I have no confidence in that pick, but I was trying to find some victories maybe.
Well, if you don't like Corey's pick, you can find him on Twitter at Corey Geiger. And Corey, great work you do at NittanySportsNow.com. Encourage folks to check it out. And Corey, again, thanks for the time. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and enjoy the game on Saturday.
Same to you. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a good afternoon.
And now on to my 4-pack of picks for this weekend. It's super easy. We're going to go with green bean casserole, yams with melted marshmallows on top, stuffing, and my lock of the week is turkey. Easy enough. All right, let's get to it. Friday slate. We'll start at our favorite conference, the Big Ten. Iowa takes on Nebraska, a 1 p.m. game on Fox. The Hawkeyes are a 13.5-point favorite in this one. Nebraska is bad. Iowa, they're rolling. They had a sluggish 0-2 start to the year. They've won 3 in a row. There is no reason to believe that Iowa can't win this game by at least 2 touchdowns. Iowa has won their last 3 games by at least 20 points. Their 2 losses to start the year were by a combined 5 points. Iowa is a much better team than their 3-2 record. The betting numbers really favor Iowa here as well. Iowa has not lost against the number yet this year. Nebraska, on the other hand, is 3-10 against the number in their last 13 games. Hawkeyes win big, and they cover the 13.5 points. Let's head to Texas. Not for the Texas team you think I'd be betting on here. No, no, no. Texas State. They welcome my favorite team to be betting on this year, the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, 16th ranked in the country, undefeated. They take on a 2-9 Texas State team. Coastal Carolina is a 16.5-point favorite. How about that? Texas State with 11 games already this year. That is so impressive in the COVID-19 season we're in. Here's what you need to know, though. Coastal Carolina, they are playing for an undefeated season and no letdown here after a big win against App State. Texas State has allowed at least 30 points in 7 consecutive games. Coastal Carolina will have their way in this one on Saturday. The betting trend you need to know, Coastal Carolina is 6-0 against the number in their last 6 road games. Coastal Carolina covers the 16.5 points. Next, we'll head to Kyle Field, where the 5th-ranked Texas A&M Aggies face the reigning national champions, the LSU Tigers. The difference this year is that it's the Aggies that are live in the playoff hunt, while LSU is at a disappointing 3-3. A&M is a 14.5-point favorite here, and I just don't know. I went back and forth on this one, but I just think it's way too many points here. TJ Finley looked great for LSU against Arkansas last week in their victory. Meanwhile, A&M, this is their first game in 2 weeks, and the betting trends, LSU is 7-3 against the number in their last 10, and A&M is 1-4 against their number in their last 5 games at home against LSU. I just think it's too many points here. I'm going to go with LSU as the 14.5-point underdogs. And my lock of the week, we'll go back to Friday. Notre Dame heads to North Carolina, 3:30 game on ABC. Notre Dame, a 5-point favorite in this one, and I think there's a ton of value to be had on Notre Dame here. My projections have them as a 12-13-point winner, so anytime I see that, it screams lock of the week to me. I get that the Tar Heels have some firepower on offense, but Notre Dame has a very capable defense here. In fact, they have the number one ranked rush defense in the ACC this year. On the flip side, North Carolina's defense has had some struggles. This can be a high-scoring affair, but Notre Dame, to me, is way better than North Carolina, and I think the 5-point spread is way, way too low. Add in the fact that the Irish are 9-4 against the number in their last 13 games. I like Notre Dame a lot here. I'll take Notre Dame minus the 5 points. They are my lock of the week.
Here we go.
And now to the game that matters most on Saturday, the 2-3 Michigan Wolverines head back to Ann Arbor. They welcome the winless, that is not a lie, the winless 0-5 Penn State Nittany Lions. Kickoff for the game is at 12 noon. The game will be nationally televised on ABC. Dave Pasch and Mike Golick Sr. will be on the call for that one. Love Dave Pasch, so good at his job. One of my favorite football broadcasters. Look forward to hearing him call the game on the TV broadcast. Of course, on the radio side of things, Jim Brandstatter and Dan Dierdorf, they will call the game on the Learfield IMG College Michigan Football Radio Network. This will be the 24th meeting between Michigan and Penn State. The Wolverines have a 14-9 advantage in the all-time series. They usually win this game in Ann Arbor. Michigan is 8-3 against Penn State at the Big House. Of course, they've won the past 3 matchups in the Big House. However, Penn State won last year's meeting by a score of 28-21 at Beaver Stadium. A furious rally by Michigan coming up just short in that one. I mentioned the records here. Penn State's 0-5 start is the worst in history. They're also the first school ever to start 0-5 after being ranked in the top 10 preseason poll. This was a team that was expected to compete for the Big Ten East this year. However, that was gagged on early by Michael Penix and the Indiana Hoosiers on opening weekend. That then led to losses versus Ohio State, Maryland, Nebraska, and last week versus Iowa. If you're betting the game, Michigan opened a 3.5-point favorite as of this recording. I've seen that line drop to a point to about 2.5. The over-under hovering around 60 points right now. Betting trends do favor Michigan. If you like to bet Michigan football, which I never do, but if you do like to bet Michigan football, Penn State is 0-5 against the spread in every game this season. They have yet to cover. And also, by the way, the total has gone over in 4 of Michigan's last 5 games. You know what's funny? These are two teams that don't like each other and fan bases that don't like each other much. Although I didn't realize Penn State folks hate Michigan so much, per what Corey Geiger mentioned earlier. I thought, you know, maybe there was a bit of a dislike, didn't realize there was a true hatred. But all that aside, these are two teams that are incredibly similar right now. High expectations year in and year out from the fan bases of these two schools. Two coaches and coaching staffs on hot seats. Two teams that were expected to be a lot better this year and are underperforming greatly. Two teams that have lost key players. I mean, think about this for a second, the similarities. Penn State's best defender, Micah Parsons, opts out for the season. Michigan's best defender, Ambry Thomas, opts out for the season. Penn State also without Noah Kane, Journey Brown, Pat Freiermuth. Michigan, Nico Collins opts out. Injuries to Quiddy Pay, Aiden Hutchinson, the tackles, Hayes and Mayfield. Question marks with quarterbacks. Penn State benches starter Sean Clifford for Will Levis, who will start on Saturday. Michigan benches Joe Milton for Cade McNamara, who will start on Saturday. Hopefully Cade. When Michigan took the lead at the 13-38 mark of the fourth quarter last week versus Rutgers, it marked the first time they had led in a game since the end of the Minnesota game. That's 227 minutes and 22 seconds of game time without a lead. However, on the flip side, Penn State hasn't really had a lead either. They trailed at halftime by 10, 15, 21, 21, and 17 points in their first five games of the season. I mean, the similarities between these two football teams right now is startling. But here is the good news for Michigan. Michigan has momentum right now. Penn State does not. Michigan showed something in that comeback versus Rutgers. Cade McNamara came in, gave the offense a spark. Hassan Haskins took over the backfield and showed why he should be the number one guy moving forward. The receivers made plays in space. Michigan continued to struggle on defense, there's no doubt about it. But they won a football game. They faced adversity and they found a way to win the game, and they got a big boost from a big quarterback change. Penn State, on the other hand, they got trucked by Iowa. And this was after falling to Nebraska and Maryland, and as I aforementioned earlier, games that they trailed in halftime and just didn't have a shot at getting back in. And it was kind of over before the game even got into the second half. So to say that Michigan is coming into this game feeling better about themselves and the rest of their season versus Penn State would be a understatement. The mental edge no doubt favors the Wolverines here. But that's about it for the advantage. I mean, I'd love to tell you Michigan will put up 35 or 40 points against this Penn State team on Saturday, but it would be naive to think that the coaches will draw up the same game plan that worked versus Rutgers when Cade McNamara came into the game and dial that same plan back up on Saturday. Is it logical? Oh, hell yeah, it's logical. Will it happen? It just remains to be seen, because we've had our hearts pulled out from us by this staff in the past, where we said, wouldn't it just be too easy to just do the same thing again? Let's just make it more difficult and change it up. And then also what concerns me for Michigan is the injuries. I mean, Michigan is really, really banged up. You know, you talk about the guys that are out, and then you have to also throw in the fact that COVID-19 is out there. I mean, we might find out by Saturday, God forbid, and we hope not. You know, there could be a player or two out because of COVID, as we've seen with pretty much every football team throughout the season this year. So compound that, which again, we hope everyone's healthy, along with the guys that are truly banged up. Michigan's got a lot out there that they're missing. Mayfield and Hayes on the offensive line. Vestardis was out against Rutgers. Does Michigan get any of them back? What's the status of Quiddy Pay? Will he be out again? Going to be a lot of eyes on that pregame warm-up to see who is suited up and who isn't. But on the flip side, Penn State, oh, they have been terrible. I mean, the quarterback play has been awful. Clifford or Levis, both guys have been turning the ball over like crazy. They're down to their fourth and fifth string running back. Their defense has given up 30 plus points in every game this year. And you expect that against Indiana and Ohio State, but not necessarily against Maryland, Nebraska, and Iowa. Those are the three teams Penn State just lost to in a row. If you take the total points each of those teams scored and average them out,
Penn State's defense gave up an average of 35 points in those three games. That is brutal. Although then again, who am I kidding? Michigan just let Indiana, Wisconsin, and Rutgers average 43 on them. So who the heck knows what will happen on Saturday? Good luck trying to predict this one. I guess I just get this sense that there's more hope and there's a bit more excitement in that Michigan locker room right now than there is in the Penn State side of things. And I think that's going to make the ultimate difference in this game on Saturday. I think it's going to be close. I'll go with Michigan 35, Penn State 30. That will do it for this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Big thank you to Corey Geiger for popping on the podcast earlier as well to break down all things from the Penn State side. As always, feel free to email me at hailtothepod@gmail.com, tweet me at krich23, and download and subscribe to the podcast everywhere your favorite podcasts are found, including Apple iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Stay safe, stay well, enjoy the game on Saturday, and as always, go Blue.